Hachette Audio presents The Killing Moon, Book 1 of Dreamblood. Written by N.K. Jemisin. Read by Sarah Zimmerman. Author's note. Like most fantasy writers, I have found it challenging to write material influenced by real, if bygone, cultures. In some ways, I think it would have been easier to write pure historical fiction, because then I could have used all the artistic and factual information provided by scholarship and science. Since this is a fantasy novel, not a history text, I found myself in the odd position of having to dehistorify these tales as much as possible, in effect stripping away the substance of reality while leaving behind only the thinnest broth for flavoring. My goal was to give homage. My goal was not to ape reality. Armchair Egyptologists, you have been forewarned. In particular, I struggled with character names, since many of these cultures' names were meaningful compounds of words in their languages. But this isn't Earth, so I couldn't use those languages. Instead, I tried to capture a suitable structure and feel while avoiding compounds that would have meaning in those languages. Since I am by no means an expert, this makes it entirely possible that one or more of my characters has a name that means beloved of cheese or something similar. My apologies if so. From T.E. Lawrence's The Seven Pillars of Wisdom, A Triumph. All men dream, but not equally. Those who dream by night, in the dusty recesses of their minds, wake in the day to find that it was vanity. But the dreamers of the day are dangerous men, for they may act their dreams with open eyes to make it possible. Chapter 1. In the dark of dreams, a soul can die. The fears we confront in shadows are as reflections in glass. It is natural to strike a reflection that offends, but then the glass cuts. The soul bleeds. The gatherer's task is to save the soul at any cost. Wisdom. In the dark of waking, a soul has died. Its flesh, however, is still hungrily, savagely alive. The reaper's task is not to save. The barbarians of the north taught their children to fear the dreaming moon, claiming that it brought madness. This was a forgivable blasphemy. On some nights, the moon's strange light bathed all Gujara in oily swirls of amethyst and aquamarine. It could make low-caste hovels seem sturdy and fine. Pathways of plain clay brick gleamed as if silvered. Within the moonlight's strange shadows, a man might crouch on the shadowed ledge of a building and be only a faint etching against the marbled gray. In this land, such a man would be a priest, intent upon the most sacred of his duties. More than shadows aided this priest's stealth. Long training softened his footfalls against the stone. His feet were bare in any case. He wore little altogether, trusting the darkness of his skin for camouflage as he crept along, guided by the sounds of the city. An infant's cry from a tenement across the street. He took a step. Laughter from several floors below his ledge. He straightened as he reached the window that was his goal. A muffled cry in the sounds of a scuffle from an alley a block away. He paused, listening and frowning. But the disturbance ended as sandals pattered on the cobblestones, fading into the distance, and he relaxed. When the love cries of the young couple next door floated past on a breeze, he slipped through the curtains into the room beyond. The bedchamber, a study in worn elegance. The priest's eyes made out graceful chairs upholstered in fraying fabrics, and wood furnishings gone dull for lack of polish. Reaching the bed, he took care to avoid shadowing the face of the person who slept there.